Blog Talk Radio. Hello, Eastern family. Thanks for listening to Eastern Airlines Radio. My name is Neil Holland, the producer of the show. We have a great show for you tonight, but first we have breaking news on this 19th day of November. Chuck?
Yep. Yesterday is Boeing. The FAA and Boeing study needed for the 737 MAX software changes after a crash. This article is by David Shepherdson and Eric Johnson. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration and Boeing Company are evaluating the need for software or design changes to the 737 MAX jets in the wake of last month's deadly Lion Air crash in Indonesia, the regulators said on Tuesday. Boeing's shares fell 2.1% on Tuesday on concerns related to the first crash of the newest version of the airplane maker's best-selling jets, in which all 189 people on board were killed when it dived into the sea. Indonesian investigators said on Monday the system designed to deal with the accident scenario was not described in the flight manual. They called for more training for the 737 MAX pilots. U.S. pilots unions later said they were not aware of the new anti-stall system. Operating procedures and trainings for the 737 MAX could also change as the FAA and Boeing learn more from the investigation, the regulator said in a statement. Investigators are preparing to publish their preliminary report on the crash on November 28th or 29th, 1 month after the Lion Air jet crashed at high speed in the Java Sea. Dorothy, do you have more?
Until now, public attention has focused mainly on potential maintenance problems, including a faulty sensor for the angle of attack, a vital piece of data needed to help the aircraft fly at the right angle to the currents of air and prevent a stall. The focus of the investigation appears to be expanding to the clarity of U.S.-approved procedures to help pilots prevent the 737 MAX from overreacting to such a data loss and methods for training them. Information recovered from the jet's data recorder last week led the FAA to issue an emergency directive warning pilots that a computer on the 737 MAX could force the plane to descend sharply for up to 10 seconds, even in manual flight, making it difficult for a pilot to control the aircraft. Jim Holder, what do you have?
Dorothy, pilots can stop this automated response by pressing two buttons if the system behaves unexpectedly, the director said. But questions have been raised as to how well pilots are prepared for such an automatic reaction and how much time they have to respond. Boeing Chief Executive Dennis Muilenburg told Fox Business Network this past Tuesday that Boeing provides, quote, all of the information that's needed to safely fly airplanes, end quote, and that the 737 MAX was, quote, very safe, unquote, airplane, still quote. This comes out of thousands of hours of testing and evaluating and simulating and providing the information that our pilots need to operate air airplane safely, end quote, Muilenburg said. Quote again, in certain failure modes, if there's an inaccurate angle of attack sensor feeding information to the airplane, there is a procedure to handle that, end quote, he added. The FAA on Tuesday denied a report that it had launched a new probe into the safety analysis carried out by Boeing on the 737 MAX. Now, Don, how have Boeing 737 MAX sales been doing?
Jim, I'm going to take Don's spot tonight. He's got a hoarse voice, and he wanted to say that Boeing, the world's largest plane maker, said earlier on Tuesday it delivered 43 of its 737 aircraft last month, up from 37 a year ago, helped by a booming global market. The number of 737 deliveries was down slightly from the 61 delivered in September due to lingering supplier problems flagged by a Boeing executive last week. Now, folks, we have a special broadcast replacing our regularly broadcast of November 26, a roundtable discussion with a panel of experts led by Christine Negroni, TV news correspondent for ABC News, about the latest on Lion Air Flight 610. This special broadcast will be live on Sunday, November 25th at 7 p.m. East Coast time. We hope you will plan to join us with your questions for the experts. Remember, now there will be no program November 26th as usual at 7 p.m. This replaces it.
Hello, Eastern family. It's great having you with us. My name is Chuck Albright. I'm sitting in for Jim Hart. He's under the weather tonight. I'm coming to you from a place called the Villages in the middle of Florida, down by Orlando. And we're having beautiful weather this week. It's a little cool. Snowbirds are always complaining that it's cold here. I can't figure that out. But welcome, and thank you for listening and calling the show. You've truly made us the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We love to hear your comments and share your memories with the radio listeners from around the world during the broadcast. If you haven't called the show before, all you need to do is call 213-816-1611. Just say hello to talk to us on the air. You're going to be live. We can identify many countries around the world who listen in with our Blog Talk Radio application. Isn't it great that we can keep the Eastern legacy going out to not only the Eastern family, but to listeners from many different countries around the world? That's what we try to do every week on the EAL radio show. Want you to join us by adding your voice toward the broadcast? Our thanks also to those who choose to listen by the computer using their radio icon on their homepage at www.ealradioshow.com, or perhaps by signing in at the site of provider Blog Talk Radio at www.blogtalkradio.com/CaptainEddie. Should you wish to talk during our live broadcast, feel free to use our call-in number, 213-816-1611 at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Don't forget to push the number one button if you want to talk. Let me repeat the number so you can write it down for your Monday night visit. By the way, tell your friends about us. And don't forget, you can listen to any of our 391 Monday night broadcasts and our 75-plus Thursday broadcasts by simply going to blogtalkradio.com/CaptainEddie and scrolling down through the archives of the broadcast. Each episode is briefly described. Our lines are always open for calls, and you can choose not to participate and talk live on to our host, but we ask you to please mute your phone, as our producer does not have the capability of filtering out background noises. Hosts tonight's show are myself, Dorothy Gowan, Captain Jim Holder, Captain George Jin, Captain Mike Scott, and Colleen DeFleece. Good evening, host. We have two very special guests whom we would like to meet in a moment. Now, Mr. Producer, I see you are number one for takeoff. So let's get flight Episode 391 in the air.
On June 30th, 1948, the Allied powers began a massive airlift into the city of Berlin. It was their answer to a road and rail blockade set up by the Soviet Union 2 months earlier, and it shook the world by its daring and effectiveness. As part of the post-war settlement, the former German capital had been divided into four sections. The British, Americans, and French were in the western areas. The Soviets occupied the east. But Berlin itself was inside Soviet-occupied territory, which meant that all food supplies and any other kind of material needed to keep life going had to pass through their checkpoints before it could reach the Allied zones. The blockade was an effort to drive the West out of the city. The airlift was to make sure it could survive, and it worked. For weeks, workers at the airport had to handle thousands of tons of supplies which were flown into the British sector every day by planes landing every 4 minutes. As the American Secretary of State George Marshall put it, "We are in Berlin to stay. The city will be kept alive." To underline the point, in one 24-hour period, American planes delivered 7,000 tons of supplies on 895 flights. In the end, with the shops still full despite all the Soviet efforts to empty them, Moscow backed down. In a deal arranged at the United Nations, two Germanies were established. The German Democratic Republic was set up in the east, the Federal German Republic in the west. Berlin itself would remain divided. That it did was due largely to the success of the Allied airlift. Politicians in the east finally realized that other ways would have to be found to isolate their people from the West, which ended years later with the building of the Berlin Wall.
Eastern employees know the dedication Eastern Airlines when it came time for defending this country. It was also was known to give pilots and other personnel, such a mechanic, flight attendants, and ground personnel, leaves of absence for just cause. The Berlin airlift of 1948-1949 was one such humanitarian cause. Tonight we plan two special guests, one of which cannot be with us, Dr. Thomas Keller, who I'll tell you a little bit about, but both are spearheading the 70th anniversary of the Berlin airlift, which will be held June 19, 2019. Dr. Thomas Keller was born in 1957 in Remscheid, Germany. Keller is an initiator of the Berlin Airlift 70 and an independent M&A consultant. Dr. Keller is also an ex-paratrooper and lives and works in Hamburg, Germany. Tonight we have with us Peter Braun, who was born in 1965 in Tenbauer, Netherlands, and is an initiator also of the Berlin Airlift 70 and an independent management consultant. Mr. Braun works in Groningen, the Netherlands, and is a specialist in aircraft types, and their history is as the next paratrooper. Peter Braun is with us tonight, and he will bring back the Candy Bombers along with their team for an anniversary event. Welcome, Peter, and sorry, Dr. Thomas, that you can't be with us. Would you please tell our listeners about yourself, Peter, and what you will be doing to put on this tremendous flight operations? It's all yours, Peter.
Well, thank you very much, Dorothy. Thank you all for having me on the show. It's quarter past one on the Tuesday morning, about 200 kilometers north of Amsterdam is where I'm located. My name is Peter Braun. As Dorothy has rightfully put it, I'm an independent management consultant, but I also have a heart for aviation. I'm 53 years of age. I was born in 65, so I'm was born way after the war, but I have been brought up in the sense of aviation because my father was a jet jockey for our Air Force back in the 50s and 60s. So hence the aviation genes are there. As Dorothy put it rightfully, I used to be a paratrooper in the Royal Dutch Army, and I have been involved in organizing commemorative airborne events in Normandy every year, something I will do again next year with a very big event for the 75th D-Day anniversary, but I can come back to that later. Immediately subsequent to the 75th D-Day anniversary, which I'm organizing, we are going to bring back 40 DC-3s from all over the world to three locations in Germany. Next year, we'll see the 70th anniversary of the end of the Berlin airlift. By this time, 70 years ago, it was in full swing, but it would have been ended by the 12th of May, 1949. And that is the reason why we're celebrating it next year. At the moment, the counter says 38 DC-3s, two Junkers 52s, one PBY Catalina, and a DC-4, which, of course, is the quintessential candy bomber. And we're going to three different locations in Germany, starting at Wiesbaden-Erbenheim Air Base, which is U.S. soil. That's where we'll be spending 2 days, from the 10th to the 12th of June next year, after which we will ferry all of the aircraft to Fassberg Air Base, where on the 15th of June, the German Armed Forces will have an open day for visitors, to be followed by 3 days smack dab in the middle of Berlin. And that's what we've been working on for the last 2.5 years. It's not just Dr. Keller, who unfortunately cannot be with us. It's not just me. It is also a friend of ours, also an ex-paratrooper by the name of York Siebert, and that's the third partner in crime, so to say. At this moment, as I said, we've got 41 aircraft confirmed, with more on the back burner. Hotels are arranged, airports are arranged, and we are looking at an event which is going to be epic in aviation terms. For one last time, next year in June, we are going to bring back all the candy bombers to Germany for one very last time. It's going to be an aviation event of epic proportions, and we of course hope you can all be there next year. And I'm fully open for all of your questions.
Peter, the candy bomber, wasn't that named because of one of the soldiers that came back and gave the young kids candy, and he was so popular among those kids that he decided to promote this airlift?
Yeah, that soldier was a young lieutenant by the name of Gail Halvorsen, who lives in Provo, Utah, by the way, and is now 98 years of age. And he is our honorary patron for next year. Somewhere during the Berlin airlift, I think it was somewhere mid-1948, he landed at Tempelhof Airport, and he couldn't go back to the western part of Germany because fog had come down on Tempelhof. And when he came in on his C-54 or DC-4, if you like, He overflew a group of German kids. He took a Jeep, went to the end of the runway and to see what those kids were, what they were doing. And he was astounded by the fact that in the middle of October that year, those kids were still wearing shorts, and two or three of them were not wearing shoes. You should imagine that in 1948, the Berlin population, 2.2 million people, by the way, were in a state which was worse than at the end of the Second World War 3 years before. The calorie situation in 1948 was dire compared to what the situation was at the end of the Second World War. Nobody knows this. Gail Halvorsen had in his pocket three sticks of Wrigley Spearmint. You know them, the green little packages. And he divided them.
Oh, yeah.
We all know them.
Yeah.
He divided those. He broke them into pieces, and he divided those amongst the kids. And he promised all those kids that he would be back next day. He would wiggle his wings, hence the reason why in Berlin he's also known as Mr. Wiggly Wings. He wanted to wiggle his wings, and he promised those kids to throw out Hershey bars and Wrigley's on little parachutes. And he did. And he started doing that from that time on, and he infested his colleagues to do the same thing. And lo and behold, 2 months later, he was called before his boss, and he thought, oh, my God, I've done something wrong. But what he didn't know was that thousands and thousands and thousands of Berlin kids had sent letters to the Tempelhof administration asking who this pilot was. That's how he became famous. I mean, he's an honorary citizen of the city of Berlin now, and he's going to be the honorary patron for our event next year.
Good.
Oh,
great.
How wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Any other host? Come on. I know you've got a question or two. If you don't, I've got a bunch of them.
Well, I've got one. Throwing the parachutes out, the candies on parachutes, he must have had somebody back in the back of the airplane throwing them out, because it seems like the props would have chewed them up if he threw them out of the cockpit. Can you elaborate on how he did that?
Yeah, I think his loadmaster got them out the emergency windows over the wings.
Yeah.
That's how they probably did it. And by the way, we're going to repeat the whole thing next year. We have got permission from the German CAA to do another candy drop over Berlin. And that's going to take place on the 16th of June next year.
What's the real flight?
Wonderful. That's June 16th next year?
That's June 16th next year. We are currently working on finalizing the definitive program. And it will be published on our website, which is BerlinAirlift70 with a 7 and a 0 .com, BerlinAirlift70.com. It holds all the information you will need to get to the locations and to pay us a visit and to come see the candy bombers.
Well, listen, if you'll please send me that information, I'll be sure to post it on our website.
I will, Dorothy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Mike here. Was just checking on the those guys used to make pretty low approaches coming into the airport there. Was there any resistance from the west side to try to deter what was going on in regards to that operation?
Well, basically not at all. Not at all. There was no objection. There were no problems and no limitations whatsoever. You must understand that the approaches to Tempelhof back in 1948 were basically flattened. I mean, 3 years before the whole event happened, the guys that flew the C-54s and C-47s were flying other kind of aircraft and dropping other stuff over Berlin. So basically, the approaches to Tempelhof up to half a mile out of the apron of the runways was basically flat. So there was no problem at all. And from the Berlin population, there were no objections at all, because they very well understood that the only way the city could be saved was with American and British and French help. Please understand that it wasn't only American aircraft, but also right. British and French aircraft. And it wasn't the air forces that started the airlift. It basically was a number of civilian airlines who mustered all their aircraft that were available back in early 48 to start the airlift. And then, of course, the air forces, the RAF and the United States Air Force, they took it over because they had the means to do it and the logistics. And they saved the city, basically. And that yep. is something which the Berlin population has still not forgotten. I mean, the Berlin operation, the Berlin airlift, still up to this day is still the largest humanitarian aid operation ever conducted in the world.
It's interesting. Yeah, I know I'd been over to East Berlin prior to them taking the wall down, and it was very interesting over there. But thanks, that's good information. Thank you.
You know, Peter, I'm interested in how you found 30 some C-47s, Dakotas, whatever you want to call them. Where are they coming from? Are they coming? Any of them from America? Going over for the operations?
Yes, sir.
Tell us about that.
Oh, yes, sir. Well, there at the moment, we're only talking piston-engined aircraft. We're not talking turbines. We're only bringing in original ones. At the moment, there is about 150 piston-engined DC-3s still in existence in the world, of which 25 are based in Europe, and another, I guess, about 80 or 90 in the U.S. A lot of them are still in operation in South America, flying the Andes routes. And, of course, there's a number of them in Australia and New Zealand as well. But coming back to your question, basically half of the aircraft that have confirmed by now, and we're talking 38 DC-3s, come from Europe, and the other half are coming from the United States. In the United States, we have formed a separate legal entity, which you would call a 501c3. It's a charitable organization, and that organization is helping and supporting 19 different DC-3 owners from the United States to come to Europe next year, not just for the Berlin Airlift event, but also for another event I'm doing, which is called DAX over Normandy, which is an abbreviation for Dakotas over Normandy. And that is an event which celebrates the 75th anniversary of the D-Day landings. But that is that's an event I think we can talk about some other time.
Okay,
well, Peter,
wonderful.
Neil, listen, I really don't have a lot to contribute to this evening. But I will say that in 1948, Jim Holder was 11 years old. And in Jackson, Mississippi, we like to go to the movies. This is way before television. And we went to the movies, and you saw the movie, you saw cartoons, and you saw a newsreel. And I'm here to tell you, in 1948, little Jim Holder, 11 years old, looking at the screen, all I remember was those airplanes going in and out, in and out, in and out. I really didn't know what it was all about, but I learned later that it pretty much saved Berlin, as Peter has been saying.
The yeah. old movie tone news.
Right, there you
yeah.
go.
You know, I looked on the internet to find the clip, and I did find one at the beginning of it and one at the end of the airlift, and I just decided to use the one at the beginning. But it's hard to copy and paste the Pathé news, which is British. The British Pathé News was pretty much covering that, and I found this on Universal. I think it was Universal. And it's very interesting to go back and listen to the newscast that time of you know, World War II and after, and especially the Berlin airlift. And, of course, Jim, Mike, and all of us Eastern people that flew Eastern aircraft, Peter, we heard stories flying with the captains that we flew with when we were young co-pilots, and just amazed at their World War II contribution. And many, many of them, we'll read a few of the names tonight, that actually participated in the Berlin airlift. Jim Holder, do you remember any, or Mike, that you flew with? I know Jerry Woods, probably the most popular or famous one with Eastern, and we'll talk about that in just a minute.
Well, Eastern, like you said, Eastern had one of its legendary pilots, Captain Jerry Woods, who was the chief pilot, you know, down at Miami.
Took a
major role in the Berlin airlift. Most of us still around may not remember his importance to this great airlift, so let me give you a brief description. Let's start with Jerry's story. After joining Eastern, he was promoted to captain in 1942, and throughout his career, he devoted special interest to air safety, including the development of international aspects. In 1947, he was appointed as a consultant to President Harry S. Truman's Special Board of Air Safety. Later, he was selected as a member of the commission that went to Germany to observe, to coordinate, and to collaborate in and with the Berlin airlift, especially in its relation to domestic airlines and operational safety.
Peter,
conclusion of
just a minute, Chuck. Hang on a sec, Chuck. I want to ask Peter a question. In your research that you've done, a lot of research, I'm sure, for this 70th anniversary, did you ever run into the names of people like Captain Jerry Woods, who was one of the representatives appointed by Harry S. Truman, President Harry Truman?
I've heard the name, but the name indeed does ring a bell, but I'm not too sure on what role he played. I don't know too much about that. My role within the Berlin Airlift 70 organization is to line up the aircraft. Everything flying, everything in the air is on my plate. So I'm sorry to say I haven't got that much time to look into the history of individuals who played a part. But that is something that by our organization is being looked into. One of the things we are trying to do is get in touch with guys who flew, with mechanics who maintained the aircraft, who played their part during the early, and try to get them to Germany next year.
Wow.
I mean, we have a full working relationship with the United States Air Force. The American ambassador in Germany to Germany knows what's going on. The commander of United States Army and Air Forces in Europe and Africa, they exactly know what's going on. We have an American retired colonel working for us at Wiesbaden Air Base, and he's my liaison there. We're working at top levels in Germany to get this done. And top levels, I mean, top level. You can't get any higher in Germany than the people we're talking to right now.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Chuck, I'm sorry to cut you off. Yeah, go ahead.
No
I'm
problem.
Hey, that was interesting. I know who was helping Peter out there. Jim, after the conclusion of World War II and when the Russians withdrew behind the Iron Curtain, the United States was confronted with a challenging arduous program called the Berlin Blockade. Supply lines were cut off to the American sector. It was particularly a sensitive situation because the transportation system for bringing in food was severed. Looking for a person with a very specialized form of expertise, they called in Captain Jerry Woods, the gentleman we've been talking about, from the airlines to help them create the Berlin airlift. His early experience as a barnstormer provided to be invaluable for the endless stream of Douglas C-54s, transports carrying such basics as food, coal, and finally, they broke the Soviet blockade of Berlin, the former German capital. Berlin airlift caused to be introduced a new geopolitical twist to the concept of air power.
Yes,
Mike?
Jim. Few that our producer were able to identify through articles appearing in a repartee, the magazine of the retired Eastern Pilots Association, are as follows. We have a Captain Ed Roper. He was recalled by the Navy to fly the Berlin airlift and eventually returned to finish his career at Eastern Airlines. And then we had a Captain Gene Garges with the Berlin Airlift Veterans Association, of which he was a charter member. We had a Captain Charles White. He was the captain of an Eastern Airlines Constellation that was involved in a mid-air collision with a TWA Boeing 707 over Ridgefield, Connecticut. We are doing a special on the heroism of this man and the saving of the passengers and the crew members, only to die himself in the rescue of a soldier aboard. Then there was a Captain Charles McCullen, joined the Army Air Corps in 1943, and he was assigned to the 451st Bomb Group, flying missions over Italy and Europe, and he flew the Berlin airlift also as the main thing. There was a Captain Gilmore Brady Beach. His country again called him to serve, and Captain Beach responded by taking a leave of absence from Easton to become one of our brave pilots who flew the Berlin airlift. A heroic effort launched by American, British, French forces countered the Soviet Union blockage of Western Berlin at the onset of the Cold War. Many have remarked about the grit and guts that these guys had. It took a lot of these pilots to carry off in the greatest humanitarian air rescue in history. Pilots endured grueling 12-hour shifts, averaging 4 flights a day before taking 12 hours of rest. Then they were right back flying another 12 hours. The commitment of these Berlin Airlines pilots lasted for 15 months, during which time almost 180,000 flights were made with precision timing, delivering over 2 million tons of supplies to the Berlin airlift, which cemented Americans' commitment to the defense of Europe, is credited to giving impetus and creation of NATO and establishment of West Berlin as an independent nation. Many of us knew others who flew back when they were co-pilots. When they flew the airlift, it was fascinating to have listened to most of their stories when they were willing to share them with us. Thank God for the Lord, these men and women who gave their time to this wonderful mission, the greatest generation for sure.
Well, that pretty much concludes our discussion about the Berlin airlift, and I want to thank Peter, you, for being available,
Neil, can
especially
I say
about 2
quick?
O'clock in the morning. Yeah, Jim Holder, go ahead.
Yeah, Captain Gene Garges, the second name mentioned. I flew with Gene Garges.
I did, too.
I flew with him up in New York on the Electra back when I was a young fella based in New York City, and it was great to fly with him and hear his stories about what all he did over there. And Gene liked to talk, and I like to listen, I'm telling you. And incidentally, yeah, this has nothing to do with it, but Gene Garges was the first Eastern captain to become a rope. Now, you ask me what a rope is. That's a retired old pilot flying engineer. He was the first guy to turn 60 and go to the back seat on a 1011. And I saw him right after that happened at a Reaper convention, and I said, man, you're going to find out what it is to fly with mean captains. You thought you were mean. And he was a great guy to fly with.
He must have been, and he must have told you some great stories.
He did. I enjoyed flying with old Gene Garges. He was grouchy
now and then,
but you know we all are.
They used to call him Garges George.
That's right. You got it.
Yep.
But
I'm
sure you'll probably run into some of the Eastern folks during this operation, Peter. And
I hope you do too.
And oh, by the way, is there any way of volunteering a person's time in this thing, or is there a person that you can contact if you want to to list your services? As
well, just go to the website and pop us an email. Pop us an email with everything you'd like to do or like to comment on, and we'll try to do something. But coming back to your question, whether you can volunteer, basically the teams we have are already set for the last have already been set for the last year and a half. We're almost into the last 6 months before the event, so we're getting into the details already.
Yeah.
Our basic challenge at the moment we have is getting the funding, and for that we're very actively seeking for sponsorship, of course. If you have any thoughts about that, I'm your guy to talk to.
Okay, very good.
Peter, I have one question. Neil, I have a question. When you do find out those pilots that were involved, do you plan to list their names in any way up in your website so people are aware of who they are? That would be great.
Well,
because I was on the website and I didn't. Yeah, I didn't see anything so far, so I was kind of wondering. It doesn't say who's going to be flying in the airplanes that you plan to have, so I was kind of wondering about that also.
No, we at the moment the website lists the aircraft that are confirmed.
Right.
But basically, all the aircraft at the moment are in their winter maintenance and they're getting ready to make the big jump across the Atlantic early in May next year.
Right.
But for the moment, we do not know yet who their crews will be.
Okay.
That is something for the owners, for the museums, and for the associations who own them. And come March next year, we have a better understanding as to who's going to fly them.
Right. Now, another question is, like, on the site, when you go to click in the event that's there, it goes into German, which if you're not German like I am, I don't know how to read it. How does that work? Is there going to be some site that's going to have English on it that will relate to the same thing, or is it the same thing?
You mean the foundation page?
I guess it's that's where I'm at. That's the one that was on the Emery Riddle.
The foundation is what you would call a 501c3 organization,
okay.
And that is the charitable organization that has ordered the limited company to organize the event.
Okay.
I'm one of the trustees of the charitable organization, and I'm also the event director for the limited company that organizes the event itself. The thing is, we haven't yet translated the charitable organization site into English, but the event site, which is called BerlinAirlift70.com, is fully in English. It is in English already. And it holds all the aircraft that are already confirmed.
Okay, because I don't see that hyperlink there, so perhaps you could send me that as well.
I will. I will,
okay.
Dorothy. I will send you all the links you need.
Okay.
And if you have any questions, just pop me an email on the email address you have.
Okay.
And I will get back to you ASAP.
All right. Very good. No problem.
With that one. Okay.
Very good. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show. And if you'd like to have me back somewhere down the line, coming towards the event, I'd be happy to oblige.
Wonderful,
very
Peter.
Good.
And it's very easy to listen to us over in Holland. Last name, of course. But all you have to do is go to our website, and you can click on and listen to it right on your computer. And we're on every Monday. And invite your friends over there to listen to the Eastern Airlines radio show. We'd be happy if you could pop in on our shows, we'd be happy to talk with you and see how the weather is there and how things are coming along for the Berlin Airlift. So we look forward to hearing from you again.
My pleasure. Anytime, if you'd like to have me back.
Peter, that hyperlink is also on my email that you'll find every time I send anything to you. It's at the bottom, so you can go through the door that way.
No problem. I will.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm going to finish my coffee. It's 1:45 in the morning. I'm going to brush my teeth, and I'm going to hit the stack.
Okay. Good night, Peter.
Oh, good night.
Thank you
good
all.
Good day, I should say. Thank you.
Thank you.
My very pleasure, good. Dorothy. Bye-bye.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Bye. Thank you, Jim. Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Dorothy?
Okay. Just a few announcements here. We're up to 1,006 on our membership. We have a new one, James Rogers. He's a 23-year-old gentleman, and he comes from Quebec and a friend of Jim Hart's. Dick Ahrens, of course, who's going to be on the program next week, is an aviation technical writer from Ridgefield, Connecticut. We also have great comments from the Facebook members on the James E. Hartley plaque and the Ketty Captain Eddie Rickenbacker of Fountain Coin being in Miami. So there's a few up there. Unfortunately, I couldn't put them all because there's quite a few. Our Thursday show that we have coming up, and that will be on November 29th, is the Eastern Airline Plays the Big Band Era of Miles Davis, Jazz Trumpeteer. On November 26th, we will not have an evening program. That, again, is that special program by Christine Negroni on November 25th at 7 p.m. That replaces that show, and it's the Needle Ball and Airspeed versus Airplane Automation. It's a roundtable discussion, what happened to cause the crash of Lion Air MAX 737-8. Next week, December 3rd, is Dick Ahrens, and he's the Philadelphia Daily News aviation reporter that shared his article on the collision of Eastern Flight 853 and TWA. So that's going to be another program we'd love to hear. We also have an example of that music that we heard last week, Dizzy Gillespie, and that is on our website, Blog Talk Radio, and it can be reached there with its, many of the other Monday night programs and from the Eastern Files program. And that's it for tonight. Back to you, Neil.
Well, Dorothy, I'm going to play just a few bars of what we heard this past Thursday with Dizzy Gillespie. I'm sure you guys have heard this before. Just a few seconds of it, just to whet your appetite. You see what you guys miss?
That sounds like a real belt buckle polisher. That's when
Can you imagine
dance real close
to that
real
on the
slow.
Dance floor?
I've got
it
a question for you, Neil.
Yes, sir.
Captain Neil, Mike here. And I don't know, you may have done some of the stuff in past shows. I'm not sure. But has there been anything on the old Air Transport Command, which is the military transport division of the airlines back in World War II, which my dad was a part of? Have you done that before? Or?
We did that a few years back when we looked at Eastern's military operation, and most of it came from the story that was written by Captain Bill Malone and put in the Repartee magazine.
Yes.
And we did a show on that and Eastern's operation during World War II, and it was a great one. It's time to bring it back probably soon, so perhaps we can put that on the agenda for next year.
Right. Maybe we'll do one of the shows in January. And
I'm looking at a picture of my dad on the wall here in his ATC uniform down in Florida.
Okay.
Oh, how nice.
Neil.
Yes,
Neil,
sir.
Neil.
Yes, Jim.
Yeah, as you know, I'm trying to coordinate. I'm 81 years old, and I get confused easily. Now,
you know
from yesterday in my phone call. Now, next Sunday, the 25th, is when we're having a radio show, right?
Correct.
Sunday, that's right.
Nothing on the 26th. Well, I got that my calendar right in front of me, and I've got it written down, and I will be there.
Okay. Oh. We're counting on it.
And I'll give Carrie your message, Dorothy.
Okay, good. You do that. And Mike Scott, you have I invite you to do the same thing. If I need a picture of you or anything, I'd be happy to get the picture to put up there, any kind of a bio you want me to change or reword or whatever. Just send it to me, and I'll take care of it.
Didn't I send you one? I thought I sent you one on the website there.
I don't.
I want to see what you look like, Captain Mike.
Well, I scare myself every time I walk by the mirror. So you know, at 77 years old, I'm not looking so good anymore.
He's got to be handsome, Neil. All those 727 captains are handsome. You know that.
There you go. That's what we say at the end of the
That's
show.
That's it. It's the old story. Check essential. Reduce the load and power the buses.
I did ask you for one mic, but I haven't got a bio or a photo yet to put on there.
Okay. We'll see if we can get something up there.
Okay.
It's
I'm
like,
looking
you know,
forward to it.
It's the first officer's creed. When you got in there, was pedo heat, window heat, and when do we eat?
Yeah. Well, you remember all the great sayings.
And
Jim Holder.
You and on me.
Jim Holder, I look forward to getting Carrie's picture also.
Yes,
oh,
absolutely.
God. It's going to be a struggle, but I'll try.
I can always search somewhere, so better she give me one. You know
there
how
you
that
go.
Goes.
There you go. I'll tell her. You'll make the choice. She doesn't. So she's had her picture in repartee or repartee, whichever, whatever you call
right,
it. I don't
exactly.
know. I'm just the editor. How should I know?
I have a lot
Colleen.
Of those.
Yeah. Jim, you do a good job.
Yeah.
As long as Colleen sends me her bio and photo, I don't have a problem with it.
Okay, very good. Very good. Really a great show tonight. I enjoyed listening to Peter.
Excellent. I loved hearing him.
I forgot to ask him about what kind of media coverage was going to take place or who's covering it.
That could be
because
on his
that's quite
website.
That's quite an operation that they're putting
Yeah,
together.
It really is. The website is really very informative, and it does send you to that German website, and it looks great, and I'd love to read it. So once I get it, the
you'll have to pick up,
will be happy to.
You'll have to pick up the latest issue of Der Spiegel.
I got an idea. Well, I think all the hosts should go to Germany over there and host a radio broadcast, right, Chuck?
I think it's appropriate.
Yeah, right.
Eastern Airlines, East Berlin.
My passport's expired.
Now we can get the Air Force to pay for our tickets.
Yeah, right. That's the thing there. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Well, it was a good show.
Right.
I enjoyed
can't
it.
Can't pass ride anymore, that's for sure. Can't pass ride.
But he came in pretty clear from all the way over there in Amsterdam.
He really
did.
Yeah, clear
as
a
bell.
Very
good,
I really enjoyed listening to those stories from back then because, you know, we weren't really, we were alive maybe, but we really didn't know too much of what was going on as little kids.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
I remember.
Okay.
Well, I guess Captain Neil, you probably got some responses on that email you sent out in regards to the flight crews, the list.
I sure did. We're going to do a
not
show.
Not flying with certain people. Well, my philosophy on that was always I don't know if it's going to be censored or not, but I always said it was better to be the asshole and have to work for one.
Yeah. All right, Neil.
Yeah, Jeff. Yeah.
You read my email about the DC-8 flight to L.A. and back with a layover out there. Did you read that email?
I sure did.
I don't know who that captain was.
Oh, I know. He's passed away, so we could use his name if we wanted to, but...
No, I don't want to use his name. But boy,
even...
what a jerk. Oh, God. And he thought that
you're
was
not
a
the
great
only
flight.
One. Yeah.
He thought it was great. I was sitting there thinking, it's the worst flight I've had in 10 years. And he thanked me for having such a wonderful flight. I said, man, you don't know what a good flight is.
The DC-863 is what my dad was on when before he passed away. So
really? Yeah. I love that airplane. I just love listening to it. It'll howl on the ground. It sounds like it's going 400 miles an hour sitting on the ground at idle.
Yeah.
With those engines will cowl that way. And when you took off, it just was a roar in the cockpit. And at 100 feet, all of a sudden it stopped because the noise has been bouncing off the runway. And
bifurcated duct engines on there.
Oh, man, it was a going machine. The only thing that even came close was the 1011, but I think the DC-863 would outdo it as far as performance.
Well, it had all the looks over the 1011, that's for sure.
Oh, don't say that. 1011 was a pretty airplane.
That was
pretty ugly.
Yeah.
Well, I flew them both, but I still got to say the 747 is my favorite.
It's like Milton Berle said.
We plan to do the cockpit personnel preferences on December 10th, folks. So
good.
Look forward
December
to that 10th. One.
All right. Yeah.
Sounds like he's trying to get us signed off.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what.
No, I'm not. I just wanted to make sure I got that in so you know that we are going to do a show on it.
Eastern 391, you're clear to land.
Thank you.
Eastern 391, wake up. You're clear to land.
Check down 3 green.
That's a great landing, Captain, as usual. Thanks, Mr. Peablon, for giving us a clear picture of the events honoring the Berlin Airlift next year. We look forward to hearing more as we approach June 2019 date. All of us here at East Radio Show wish the operation well. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday, November the 18th. Hey, that's right. We will... We'll have a Monday edition. We'll not have a Monday edition on our show then. America's favorite way to fly will return with another flight of adventure the following week. Well, that's our show for tonight, folks. With this, we take a line from the stories of Lake One or beyond. Where all the Eastern women are on the all the Eastern flight attendants of airline standards. All the men are good looking, and all the Eastern children and Eastern grandchildren are way above average. Well, wait till then. All say good night, Eastern family. We love you, Eastern.
Happy Thanksgiving to all.
Happy Thanksgiving
to all.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Jim.
Good night.
Adios. Au revoir. I'll be the same. Good night.